interview with Governor Attia. This is tape 14, side 2. What happened to your business while you were down in Salem?
That's a very interesting question. Of course, the business continued because it's still here today. My brother Richard would be responsible for the retail part of it. My brother Ed was on the cleaning plant side. That was very difficult on me because I realized that they were working and I was down in the legislature. And so I'd come home on a Friday after being down there all week. I'd go over to the Lloyd Center to work at night because we were open nights at the Lloyd Center. I'd work all day Saturday. You know, and I'm away from my family besides. When come vacation time, you know, I really wouldn't take 2 weeks of vacation. It may take a few days or a week. Just because I had this guilty conscience about being down there. I'm sure my brothers were particularly excited about the fact that I was down there. Not that they weren't supportive, certainly later on, but at the time I'm sure they weren't very excited about that. So I had this guilty conscience and I would come back and I'd work Friday nights and I'd work Saturday and then Sunday afternoon I'd go back to Salem. And but the business continued. Then, of course, after the session's over, I come back and would work.
Mm-hmm. Was it hard on your family?
It's very hard. That's, I guess if I have a lament, and I do have, you know, I missed a lot of growing up with my children. My wife had a large responsibility that I should have had, certainly some of it, and I didn't. It is hard. It's very hard. And you know, the people speak of that point, and indeed it's true. You have to have a pretty supportive and, although not always, mainly understanding wife. Mm-hmm. She didn't always understand this. And I could, you know, looking back, fully understand why she was not thoroughly into this whole thing.
Some legislators have told me that it cost them their marriage. In some cases.
It could be, yes.
Year after year of that kind of
That's right.
Absence.
But you know, it was interesting when Governor Goldschmidt divorced his wife and the media was lamenting over the fact that it's tough on a family life and all the rest. And they called and interviewed me and I said, yeah, it is. It's very tough on married life. The one thing I didn't say, which I thought was a great deal of restraint, was it's true, it's difficult, but Mark Hatfield and Antoinette are still married. Mm-hmm. Bob Straub and Pat are still married. Audrey and Tom McCall are still married. Dolores and I are still married. Mm-hmm. So it's something besides the strain. Margie never did like public life. So I'm sure it really was that. She just didn't like it. Not that I don't think any of the wives really were just thoroughly enchanted with all of it. But they kind of went along. Anyway, it's tough. And I really do. I think to myself, now that was really selfish on my part. I missed a lot of my growing up with my children. Put an awful lot of responsibility on my wife. So I lament about that, but that's water under the bridge.
Right. In 1973, in between 71 and 72, or 71 and 73, what were your interim committees that you were on back then?
I can't remember.
Any interim work that you know of that you were doing during that time? That
Oh, no, wait a minute. Yes, I was chairman of the Interim Education Committee. I don't know if you have that down, but that's the...
Were you working on a specific legislation that was that would be coming up in the next session?
Yeah, we several things, but the thing I can remember, and being very proud of it, as a matter of fact, the I was chairman of the education committee in 71 and chairman of the interim education committee leading up to the 73 session. And we developed, actually a lot of people still remember it, as of course I do too, I mean other than legislators, Senate Bill 1 and Senate Bill 2. And Senate Bill 1, I don't recall which did which, but one of the bills was describing what was basic education. And so my thought was, we will describe what is basic education. Then in the budgeting process, the state will say, we will pay for basic education. We encourage you, we suggest that you do whatever else you want, mm-hmm. but we'll pay for basic education. Or if we couldn't afford it, we'll pay of 2/3 of basic education, whatever that might be. But we had a measuring stick. And the other bill was for every school, and we took it in a large form, all of higher education, all of secondary, all of primary, but it actually had to be by institution. For example, Beaverton High School is part of school District 48. So actually, I even perceived it to be a goal in the classroom, a goal in Beaverton High School, a goal for School District 48, and a goal for Southern Oregon College, a goal for Western Oregon College, a goal for University of Oregon. They all had to establish goals. '73, the Democrats, there was too many Democrats. They didn't have to even worry about a coalition anymore. They took over. Ed Failey became chairman of Education Committee. OEA didn't think this was an important thing to do to describe basic education. The whole thing went down the tube. Mm-hmm. If I recall, I think recent legislatures have actually gone back and described basic education. But if we had done that at that time, both of those things, I think we'd have been on a good road for where we're going and what we were doing mm-hmm. In education. And I think it had a lot to do with the extraordinary increase in property taxes, controlling it, that is.
How would that have an effect on controlling property taxes?
Well, you know, if we're paying a certain amount mm-hmm. and you have to pay the rest, and then of course you have to your constituency, it isn't a matter of if. I heard this expression a number of times, and it did come up when we were voting in the school elections. If you vote yes on this, the state's going to pay for part of it. Oh, well, they're going to pay for some of it. We'll vote yes. There'd be greater constraints on the school districts and an argument, not persuasive argument on the part of the voter. In any event, it would have been good. It would have been good for us to do that. You talk about lament and sorry things didn't happen. I'm very sorry we didn't pass Senate Bills 1 and 2. I would jump now because I don't recall. This is 73, 75. I don't recall which year. Jason Bowe asked me, and Ed Failey continued to be chairman of education, what committees I wanted, and one of them I said was education, but if Ed Failey's going to be chairman, then I don't want to be on it. And Ed Failey was chairman, so for the first time I was off education.
I thought you were on that, this is in 1973?
No, I'm talking now further, I'm jumping on you.
Oh, further on.
I'm jumping on you.
Right, I see. Because in 73 you were on education with Dick Groener and Wally Carson and Hartung Roberts and Thorne, I believe. Well, let's see.
73?
Yeah, and that's what I have down here for 1973, yeah. Is that right?
I don't recall it that way. Maybe the story I told you related. No, it was 71, 73. I don't know. Maybe I told you the story ahead of time. Maybe it was. What do you have there for notes?
Well, in 75, I don't have you down for education.
All right. Okay, I was not on education committee. Then okay, it was 73. Mm-hmm. And Fadley would have been chairman. Fadley would have been on that. I don't know why he isn't.
He's on the one in 73.
Yeah.
But not. I didn't.
Well, he was chair of it then.
And chair. Uh-huh.
And that maybe it was at that next session I said, I want to be on education, but if Fadley's going to be chairman, I don't want to be. I told you, I remember, you know, I don't try to be unkind to anyone, but I told you, I recall that he was not one of my favorite legislators.
Yes.
And my concern really was that he was really very brusque with the people that were coming and appearing before the committees. I didn't like that. Mm-hmm. I don't like treating citizens that way. Mm-hmm. Oh, I will tell you something about the Interim Education Committee.
Please.
It's full of frustrations, but I remember there's one man who really was a outspoken critic of education. And he didn't always get his figures and facts straight, but in his mind it was perfectly clear, and he was very critical. So he was going to testify. I happened to know him. I didn't know who he was. He'd been there before, and so he's going to sit down and testify. Well, I like to run meetings. I don't like to spend a lot of time running meetings. And so he sat down, and I said, now, and I can't recall his name, we understand, from your view, that education is all wrong in Oregon. That you don't like it, it's all wrong. And so let's put that aside. Now, all I want to know from you is how we can improve it. Well, that cut his testimony down to about 5 minutes. He was a whale of a critic, but he didn't have many answers. I always chuckled to myself about that. I always thought that was pretty clever to, you know, kind of get this guy through the testimony rather rapidly.
Well, that's actually an interesting subject, and I had planned on asking you, I don't know if the subject has come up thus far or not, but how you ran your committees, and this is a point to that fact. I mean, there must be a lot of people wanting to testify, a limited amount of time. What kinds of ways did you have of running things?
I would really try to get everyone who wanted to testify the chance to testify, but I was very, very firm on let's not have duplication. You know, if you got something new you want to say, please do it. And if they'd start on the same subject again, I'd interrupt them nicely, say, look, we've already heard that. Please, we have a lot of people who want to be heard. Besides yourself, just tell us how you. You know, what new information can you give us? So that kind of speeds it up. Now, you can't always hold, you know, well, you could if you want to be really mean, but I was never that way. But you could do a lot of work and get things done more rapidly. You kind of hold a tight rein on you know, what goes on. First of all, you do start on time. You know, there's a propensity down there that if it's a 1 o'clock meeting, that doesn't mean 1 o'clock. It means something in the vicinity of somewhere between 1 and 1:20. And I would run it on time. And if I was the only one there, I'd start the meeting.
Wouldn't you have to have a quorum or?
No, I just start the meeting. Uh-huh. And pretty soon the committee members learn that 1 o'clock means 1 o'clock. It doesn't mean 1:02. So we would start it on time. Mm-hmm. And then, also often, like in the case of this gentleman that I already knew about, you know, you'd say, yeah, well, okay, let's not go through your whole litany of why you think schools are bad. We've already heard that. You just tell me where you think we can help it. And I know that he couldn't, so we didn't. I would tell you that I always had great respect and regard for my fellow committee members. And would give them latitude, but still and all, is, again, nicely just keep things moving along. And even do it today. I'm chairman of the Board of Governors of the New Oregon Golf Club, and here I am dealing with my peers and adults. You know, these are bright, intelligent. But after they've talked something to death, I just said, that's enough of that. Let's go on to something else. And so I, you know, as a matter of fact, I remember since I left, I've gotten into all kinds of charitable things. And I came in and told my secretary one day after a meeting, I'm getting tired of going to meetings. I don't run. You know, there's some of the things that happen. Mm-hmm. You just have to stay on top of it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I recall an event which we, now again, I'm dealing with some very bright business leaders. I mean, presidents of companies, large companies. And we were talking about a capital investment and whether, you know, whether we should make that capital investment. And so the motion was we should or we shouldn't, and that passed. And then the next motion related to how we were going to raise the funds for it. And there they got in all kinds of discussions. And finally I said, well, wait a minute. This discussion we're having now is what we should have had on the vote we just took. We've already made that decision. But here are these intelligent business people, they're talking about a discussion on a subject we'd already passed on. So it happens. So I guess I'm a little impatient, but you know, it's not a matter of, you know, you kind of go along and you know it's there, and you kind of, but at a point you finally have to say, oh, wait a minute, stop.
What about the discussions that you often hear about the chairman's ability to be able to control the agenda
right.
and where items come up?
That's right.
How would you use that to your advantage?
I wouldn't. The bills would. Mm-hmm. I had bills in my committee say come up. I push the committee. You know, is this something you want to hear? Is this something you want to put to the back of the book, as I mm-hmm. described to you earlier? You want to table it? You know, I wouldn't do that in all bills, but bills that look, you know, patently not of much consequence. But if the committee wanted, even if I thought it was a lousy deal, it came up. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Some chairmen wouldn't ask that question. They just wouldn't bring it up. Now, there was always a rule in committee that the committee could call up a bill. And it was used once in a while, but not too often. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you always had that opportunity. But no, I told you earlier, I had great regard for my committee, and so they would be more or less, they would be involved really in what I was doing. They knew what bills were in their book. And I'd say to them, look, we've got this bill, what do you want to do about this? Mm-hmm. Meaning, we ought to really get rid of it, because that's what I'm saying. And most often we just dispose of it, either table it or just put it to the back of the book, and they knew it was back there. In other words, nothing would happen. The session would end, and that's the end of it.
Mm-hmm. Was that, did the chairman have more leeway in doing that than other people? I mean, was he able to, were you able to, or other chairmen able to get rid of legislation
Well, it depends on chairman. Mm-hmm. The way I just did it, I don't know how often it would happen. It's hard for me to judge. Not too often. You have to respect your fellow members in order mm-hmm. to do something like that. But I can give you the other extreme. There was one senator. after he had left the legislature, and he always had a committee and a chairman, and he was a Democrat. And always had his committee room, which really the only ones that had an office were committee chairmen. Mm-hmm. All the rest of us didn't until they built the wings. Anyway, they were cleaning out the desk. They found bills in the back of the desk. He just stuffed them there, and that was the end of it. Nobody, they would just never appear anywhere. They were just stuffed. And one time he got up, let's see if I can quote this correctly. And he was leading the discussion on the bill, and he said that this was the opening sentence, this bill passed out of committee unanimously let's see, by a majority of the members present. Well, he was the only one present. No one ever questioned it. Here's the bill on the floor. He just brought it up, and he said, but this bill passed unanimously out of committee by a majority of those present.
Were there other activities like that that you were?
No, giving you extremes. You know, certainly, I'm sure a lot of them operated somewhat similar to me. Some would be rather dictatorial about what went on, mm-hmm. and then the others, like I say, this is the other extreme of having bills in the back of the drawer when they a couple of years later when they're clearing out the desk.
Well, was there any other interim activity that you can recall during the 72?
Well, I want to tell you one other story about the Interim
please.
Education Committee, because it demonstrates to me some of the frustration I had. I recall a teacher came before the committee. I'll tell two stories.
When was this?
This would be in the interim committee.
The interim committee.
Yeah. And she was talking about this very innovative remedial reading program. And if a student in this school where she was having problems reading, they would move that student into remedial reading. And then they wouldn't leave their class, they were just going to remedial reading. And as they improved, they'd go back into their class. Now that's a quick of what you can see what the theory was. And it was operating very successfully. I said to, was this great program now transferred to other schools? Well, no. Why? Well, somewhat reluctant, but education is the worst bureaucracy of anything I have ever seen in my life. You're talking about government and business bureaucracy. It's just terrible. But it wasn't their idea. So the transfer of good ideas really didn't take place. Mm. And that's the frustrating part to me about education. There's so many innovative things that could happen to improve education at less cost, but it just doesn't happen. And they have this mindset. Second grade teacher is better than the first grade teacher. Eighth grade teacher is better than seventh grade teacher. High school teachers are better than grade school teachers. Actually, it should be reversed. Mm-hmm. The number one teacher should be the first grade teacher and or kindergarten. That should be the numero uno, but that's not the way their metal bureaucracy works.
Well, kindergarten was a major issue too, wasn't it?
Kindergarten was a major issue. Betty Roberts, I think it would have been in 71, she had a bill that she wanted to lop off the senior year in high school and pay for kindergarten. Her argument was that the last year in high school wasn't meaningful. I said to her, Betty, that there's one of two things you can do, one of which is what you're doing. The other, of course, is to make the last year in high school meaningful.
Right. Well, what about the other concept on making kindergartens mandatory?
That had been a long and drawn-out discussion. It was a good idea. Sometimes it really was a political answer, and yet it wasn't a political answer. It was, in fact, true, the way I believed. For example, people said you ought to increase basic school support. My answer was always, yes, we should if we can afford it. Mm-hmm. Same thing with kindergarten. Yeah, it's a good idea, if we can afford it. And with knowledge that we probably couldn't afford it. Mm-hmm. So it was sort of a political answer, but nonetheless, that's the way I felt about it.
What was your relationship with the OEA during that period?
Well, I've kidded them. They never supported me. Where I kidded them, I think it was after the 59 session, or maybe it was a session after that, the Washington County OEA gave me a plaque. And I said to John Danielson, I suppose you want me to give that plaque back, that I got. But I don't know, they are sort of like AFL-CIO. They come up with some funny things that really don't improve the quality of education. And, you know, whether they endorsed me or not was unimportant. I was going to do what I thought was the right thing to do, and so that's what I did.
Was there anything else that came up during the 72 session?
No, the interim, the other statement, which a teacher made in the interim, and I've quoted it since then. And she is a teacher, and she says, you know, nowhere but in education have I seen the ability to turn off young people. And we listened to that, and then she said, well, can you imagine the youngster getting on the school bus on the first day of their first school day, and how excited they are, and how happy, and how wonderful this is? And then you give it 2 or 3 years, and they're not happy and excited anymore. Mm-hmm. Very good statement.
Yeah. What was your 1972 election like?
Not particularly memorable, as I can recall. Pretty much like the rest.
Do you recall any of your opposition or
no
primary or general election?
No.
I presume that I don't have my notes on it here, but I believe that you sailed through that without any problem.
Yeah, it was pretty much like I did in all of them.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about that earlier when I had the contest with the mayor of Tigard. That's really the one I can only remember. The rest of my, I would kind of gear my campaign in relation to my opponent. By that I mean, you know, how thoroughly active I would get. But I always did make a point to get out and talk with the whole idea in mind. Okay, as I told you earlier, you don't really know everything I have done, but you better find out who I am again and reacquaint yourself. But that's the only race that I can really remember being seriously contested. And as it turned out, even then I wasn't seriously contested.
The 72 election brought in a lot of new faces, didn't
it? That's right.
It was a pretty big Democratic victory, wasn't it?
That's right.
But there were a lot of people that came in. I don't have a complete list in front of me, but as I sort of scan over, of course, there are a lot of older members, Cook, Roberts, Bo. Bo had come in when? Bo was...
I don't remember.
But he had been there for a few sessions.
Yeah, he'd been there for a while.
And, but then there were some newer faces that have since become...
Old faces?
Old faces, right. Was that Vera Katz's first session? And was Lesa Coyne and Earl Blumenauer in there, too?
Well, again, you're talking about the House. Vera was in the House.
That's right. That's right.
Blumenauer was House. Kafuri, I think, was in the Senate. At what stage, I don't recall.
Gretchen?
No, Steve.
Steve.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. What changes took place in the Senate?
Well, it was a huge Democrat majority, so the concept of a coalition was just totally wiped out. There was no need to even talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
I am trying to remember. 73, 75, 77, 79. I think 73 was when the Republicans got down to 6. I have a photograph of, maybe the Society has a copy of it as well, but the 6 of us in a phone booth.
Oh, right. Yeah. I remember you mentioning that. You were elected minority leader that session, weren't you?
Yeah. Actually, the session before. I kidded about that. I said there were 6 of us, and I went on the 5th ballot. Actually, that's not the way it went, but I just used that as a joke. So I was Republican leader of 6 people. Next session got up to 7. And
Jason Bowe was elected as president that term. He was in there for quite some time.
Yes.
And what was your impression of his presidency?
I think he did a real good job.
Mm-hmm.
He was, however, I would call an astute politician, with emphasis on both words.